it's done.
Connor McDavid! It's not real!
The goal of the year?
Panarin!
Part of the past. The celebrations? Forgotten. The history?
Vegas Golden Knights!
History. We're back to a blank slate. Clean ice. All that matters now is what happens next. The Stanley Cup Playoffs.
Eastern Conference Final begins Wednesday.
Hello and welcome to Undrafted, a Dynasty Game Theory podcast brought to you by the Undroppables. I am your host, Scott Belanger, a.k.a. Jax Falcone. You can find me on Twitter at Dino Game Theory. This is episode number 165, and let's roll. And we are getting ever so closer to some off-season breakdowns of the rookie class. I've got my guest list is building over the next few weeks. We're going to have some very big names, in my opinion anyway. Felix Sharp, one of the best college analysts in the business, literally, is going to be here. He's here every year to help me be a better analyst and to help you dominate your rookie drafts. He's next week. Ray Garvin after that. I've already scheduled John Lobb. Of course, we have the Senior Bowl with Thor Nystrom. That show is going to be always awesome as he brings me the very best news from the Senior Bowl after the Senior Bowl. I am so excited for all of these guests and more in the coming weeks. I know you guys are going to be listening to every show. This is when actually Dynasty podcasts get all their listenership because this is when we make our money. We have to win the offseason, and no better person to help me win the offseason than my friend and partner here at the Undroppables, Mr. Matt Chester, who, by the way, will also be at the Senior Bowl this year. Maybe a little correspondence work down there, baby. We're sending Mr. Matt Chester to the Senior Bowl. He's actually going to – I think he's going to try out. He's bringing his helmet. That's all I know, or something about a helmet. I don't know. He's going to tell us, clear that all up right now as we – bring out Mr. Matt Chester, the Mad Jester. Welcome to the program, sir.
Thanks for the intro, Jax. How you been?
I'm doing great. You know I'm doing great because we added Travis Seal to the Undroppables today. One of my longtime friends and True North, owner and True North everything, True North Fantasy Football. He's going to continue to do his thing, but he's going to collaborate with us and do all sorts of cool stuff. I'm super excited to bring on Travis. He's such a great guy. So that just happened today. We're recording this on Wednesday. I know this drops on Thursday, but yeah, just so excited to bring him on. I'm going to start my anatomy series this week. I start to put all that information and come out with 2024's version so that we can do a better job of analyzing these prospects and dominating our drafts, just like we've done the past few years, certainly this past year, as the anatomy helped us draft Jaden Reed and avoid Jonathan Mingo. So thank you so much. We did that right, unlike the Carolina Panthers. By the way, the anatomy also loved C.J. Stroud, certainly over Bryce Young and over Anthony Richardson too, as it's not perfect yet, but it was unanimously in favor of CJ Stroud. Poor Carolina Panthers, if only they were looking at the anatomy series that Mr. Jax Falcone does, right?
As a Saints fan, I'm super thrilled that they don't know what they're doing over there. It's been a terrible franchise for as long as I can remember, and God bless them. Thanks for taking up space.
Oh, yeah, absolutely, brother. And as a Saints fan, before I get to some of this other stuff, we got to start with the best thing ever. The Saints and Jameis Winston just fucking Shaq dunking on Arthur Smith on his way out the door had to have felt really, really good.
Yeah, that was that. I mean, I got to hang my hat on something this season because it was kind of a lost season. I went into it thinking Michael Thomas would be a super clever play, super cheap, but he just ended up being what he was being. And then it was pretty much a Derek Carr offense. If you want to look at every single player, like, they're all kind of Derek Carr this year.
Yeah.
You know, so Dennis Allen has not been fun to play fantasy football with, but everybody hated Arthur Smith. And
yes.
God bless him. And Jameis Winston, yeah, he was so disrespectful. No, he rammed it down his enemy's throat. And I can't believe the maturity of that guy now. I've been looking at interviews after the game and like people trying to get under their skin saying ignoble, is that a word? How like disrespectful it was, and even to his own coach, and his coach threw him under the bus. And like somebody said, if he just went out on the mic after the game, was like, you know what? Fuck the Falcons. That's why. I don't think there would be any issue if you just lean into it, you know?
Yeah. I think he was trying to do the right thing and not be a complete prick about it and take the high road, which I thought was probably a good way to go. But at the end of the day, like I was behind him the whole way. First of all, it's an NFL team against an NFL team. It's not a fucking JV team against a Division I college team. We're like, dude, take it easy on these kids, will you? First of all, they pick sixed your ass down to the one. You know, play some fucking defense. Look, you get the ball back, Chief. Why don't you go score your own fucking touchdown? Just absolutely shut the fuck up, Arthur Smith, is my take. Very, very easy take, by the way. And I would have said that from the beginning, too, because I'm always of the opinion, if you want to prevent the other team from, you know, racking up the score, then how about you take the knee? You take the knee going the other way. Instead, you're throwing the ball around, throwing picks. Eat your own fucking medicine.
If you want to be a heel all season, if you want to be a troll and a brat to everybody all season and be all smug about it, then like, I hope that you get fired after you embarrass yourself like this. And I'll be a part of that. That's fine.
Also a great point. He was Mr. fucking, you know what? He was a crybaby all year. He had a lot to say. He was trolling the media. He was so high on his horse about his quarterback and the whole thing. He was an absolute loser all year. Nobody in fantasy liked him. At the beginning of the year, I tacitly defended him because they were kind of winning. I'm like, look, if they win, fantasy people need to shut the fuck up. Because if you win, if you go 13-3 or whatever, you know, then I don't give a shit if Kyle Pitts doesn't, you know, isn't a tight end one, but they're 13-3. You know, you get my point?
It's Mike Vrabel having three winning seasons and then getting fired. And you're like, well, you know, I get it, but hey, come on. And also, I like to play a game called like, who is this player next year? Like who's going to take Arthur Smith's role next year? Everything you're talking about him being like an annoying prick and like if you guys weren't playing fantasy, now we find out that Kyle Pitts had an extra surgery that they didn't disclose. Like that's got serious implications in a lot of gambling and a lot of fantasy. And the crossover. So why would anybody take up for that guy? But so on that note, like Aaron Rodgers better come out firing next year.
Yeah. Well, it's true too, by the way, just to piggyback off your take about the not disclosing these injuries, that, you know, the gambling, all the people gambling on the game, all the people playing fantasy football, DFS, et cetera, are all affected by that. And for whether it be Arthur Smith or any of these other NFL, you know, coaches, front office, or anybody in the NFL to say, you know what, then sorry, bro. And that's not good enough because we pay your fucking salaries. Our interest in your game pays your high wages. So you better fucking pay attention because that is absolute bullshit. And, you know, for their lack of disclosure of things that are supposed to be disclosed to cost people real dollars. Hey, you know what? Again, I've said this a few times already today, and I apologize to all the children listening, but go fuck yourself. You know what? I'm like Elon Musk out here. You know,
well, it reminds yourself. Me of like he's a GameStop. Like he's just kind of like a fraudulent bump in the market because he's kind of cheating everybody a little bit. And he's, you know, it does have real effects. And what do you do about it? I don't know. You fucking rag on him all season and hope Jameis Winston slams it down his throat to make it 48-17 and get him fired. You know,
by the way,
great
Jameis Winston, the prince that is promised. I mean, we need Jameis Winston in our lives. And I've been saying this. He needs to start to get.
It's really held him back that he's been so immature. Like that was always part of the narrative, right? And kind of Baker's the same same type of thing. You know, he's not riding his hobby horse that was riling up the troops in college because it didn't work for like the first 4 years when he's playing with a bunch of adults. And Jameis Winston came out and he did, you know, he went the 30 picks and 30 touchdowns. And he was like the number two overall scorer in fantasy that year.
Yes.
And we've been wanting it back, but if teams aren't willing to trust him to play at a mature level, so that's why, even though he was like, he had fun with it and God bless him for what he did. Yes. His response showing such maturity to like not snap at these dudes, at the reporters that all hassling him, trying to get a sound bite, and him just like continuously like, well, if that's how you feel about it, that's fine. That's, you know, you got to have it your way. And maybe a coach will be like, yo, I can see that dude leading my team. Maybe.
Yeah. I hope, at the end of the day, it's better than Tommy DeVito or Tim Boyle or, you know, whatever these, you know, losers that they're running out there. And, you know, there were something like 68 starting quarterbacks in the league this year. This just in, only 32 teams. So, I mean, absolutely unbelievable that in an environment like that, that Jameis can't find his way into a starting role and sort of secure it. Many of these teams have no chance, absolutely no chance to win, but Jameis does fill seats. And you know what? Look, Jameis, I just think he's one of the best 32 and gives you, look, if I'm a scuffling team, like I'm the Raiders right now, why wouldn't you want Jameis? Like, he gives you a better chance to win than whatever else you're trotting out there, I guess is my point. You know, being a little bit prolific, and who knows, maybe you can corral him a little bit. You know, we've seen, you know, erratic, prolific players, Jay Cutler, Jordan Love had a great season this year. You know, a lot of people dunking on me. Of course, I, you know, that's fine. Good for him. Love him. Easiest schedule in the NFL, and we'll see what happens in the future. But actually, you know what? He's got arrow up. But, you know, we've seen players like that have succeeded. And I think you're 100,000% right. I think with Jameis, it's all about like the, you know, his immature attitude, because, you know, you need that position to be so, so serious. You know, Tom Brady is the sort of the sculpture of what you need. And it's like, he's the polar opposite to that type of player, but God bless us. It is an entertainment industry too. Am I right?
Yeah, no, he's fun. He's fun. We all want that 30 and 30 season back. We don't care if, you know,
I want 40-40, you know, great. I want 40-40. Great. Yeah, let's make it happen.
Make sure you know, 40
touchdowns and 40 pick sixes, just fucking airing it out, baby. You know, at some point you and I think we're contractually obligated to talk about dynasty football. I've got a take I wanted to talk about a little bit with you, and I'm going to do that right after this. Welcome back to the program. And, you know, Matt, one thing I did want to mention is something I had mentioned on Twitter a little bit, and I don't know, it just sort of was something that even like Chalk and I, when he's like sending me deals and he's getting a lot of like offers, you know, hey man, I sell the 104 and this, and I get this and this back. And I'm like, I'm always like so hesitant. I actually literally will message him like, it's hard for me to sell a pick right now. You know, and we got to talking sort of, you know, behind the scenes about why that is. And, you know, so I tweeted it and just sort of said it without a lot of explanation. And I want to ask you sort of before we get into the conversation, we'll get into it together here. Do you sort of agree with that? I know one thing that you're very good at is you're a gameplay player. You're a dynasty game theory disciple, for lack of a better term. I mean, you're your own man, but like you and I see it the same way in a lot of ways. Do you agree with that? Or what are your thoughts about selling, you know, rookie picks, early rookie picks right now?
Even late rookie picks, even next year rookie picks, I'm scared to do it. I got an offer that everybody that's smarter than me said that I should smash, and I just can't do it right now. Is Tyreek Hill for a 111 that I acquired this year and my 25 first, and it seems like a smash for Tyreek Hill. Like if he does one more year like this, it's 100% worth it, right? But he might have three or four more games to play. Like his season's not done. He's going to be 30 next year. If I am able to get luck into Zay Flowers at 111 next year, and then I happen to get 107 in 2025, like, do you want to give up Zay Flowers and 107? Like, who's it going to be? Romeo Dunze? Right. You know, you might get Jaden Daniels next year.
Right.
Plus Zay Flowers this year. you know, the equivalence of those picks.
Yes.
Where you can get Tyreek Hill and if he tears his ACL. So like I can't smash, and it's I'm on an island on that one, but I don't know that I can remember a single win now trade that I've ever made that I've not regretted.
Yeah. Here's you're doing a. I'm glad you brought that trade up because you're right. It's like the conventional wisdom is look at this fucking idiot not taking that deal. It's like, I understand. Here's another way to also look at it too. And a lot of times, so I asked Chalk and this guy was offering him some sort of quarterback for an early, like the 103, you know, and he was getting Dak back and something else. And, you know, there's just, it was a pretty good trade for him. I was like, you know what, you know, Dak's a top, you know, 10, Superflex Dynasty startup player. So like, it's not like a bad trade. I didn't, you know, I wasn't like, oh, you're an idiot if you do. But I asked him a question. I said, how many of your league mates know that the 103 is available right now? And he was like, you know, like one or two. I said, wow. You know, how many, right? Because,
yeah.
You know, that guy sent the offer to you for your 103. So do you have any idea what the 103 could net you in that league? Do you have any idea? You know, you don't know because not everybody's paying attention. I, for one, am not paying attention to all my leagues right now. If there were someone trying to make a move for a certain pick, I'm a little bit distracted right now from really intensive trade time. This is just me personally. This is a break time for me. My sort of rhythmic, you know, off season. And I think a lot of fantasy players are the same. They're like detached right now. I'm in so many leagues where guys will miss this whole part in their fantasy. They're watching real football. But when you get close to certainly on the fucking clock, and you say, hey, 103 now available and Marvin Harrison is available. Do you know how many people are now aware that that pick is available? All motherfucking 11 of them are like sending you offers and you can really leverage that pick to its maximum value. And who the fuck knows what you can get for it plus this, that, and the other, just moving some shit around. You might be able to get what you never thought possible. And in a lot of ways, that's the reason why I don't like to make those deals because I want as many consumers of that product as I possibly can to drive up price because that's when they also get most excited to spend their money, quote unquote, for that pick.
Plus, that's when they're all trying to offload, you know, Mike Evans and Alvin Kamara. And right now they're thinking they might get a first for, I was talking to somebody yesterday, said he's going to hold, he needs to rebuild, but he wants to hold. He thinks Kamara or Derrick Henry might be in first territory, and you can't even entertain that right now because all those guys are going to be old hat. You know, this is still the playoffs, so they're only going to keep being in people's minds, and this is the highest of the price is going to be. But as soon as they, you know, knock on wood, they don't. But if they get hurt, like, what did you just spend two firsts on? I don't care if they're both 111s. You know,
right? Yeah.
You just got an injured X player. I don't want to jinx anybody, but
no, that's right. No, time. Yeah, that's right. Yeah, it's just to me, you know, the pick right now has increased in value because people are interested in it, but it's only skyrocketing. All these picks, and here's the thing: like, I mean, you know, look, there are games still going on. Tyreek Hill could actually snap his leg in the playoffs. That's actually possible. The 103 cannot.
It's a great point. Yeah.
It cannot break its neck. You know what I mean? Catching a ball down the sideline. It just can't happen. You know, because if Caleb Williams goes out and tears his knee, you know, at some sort of spring at practice of some sort, you know, practicing for the combine, the 103 just becomes someone else. You know, it cannot lose its value. It just keeps going. And as soon as someone starts to get all excited about Brock Bowers or whatever, because it's coming, and it may be me. Brock Bowers looks good as hell. You know, then what happens is now you can put any name you want to the 103. Jaden Daniels, the next Mike Vick, Lamar Jackson, or Brock Bowers, the best tight end prospect ever. Marvin Harrison Jr., the next Jerry Rice. That's what the 103 is. It's not just the 103. It now starts to take people's imagination, and that imagination makes people overpay in your rookie draft. So you might as well just sit and wait. Why sell it now? Because then you, okay, I got Dak. Great trade. Move. Dak is, okay, well, nobody's going to give you the 103 back for Dak anymore, even though it's probably, Dak's probably worth more than whatever the 103 is if you're doing a startup. It's just because you get tricked into a value proposition rather than understanding the ascension of the value of the thing that you're holding. Let it breathe, let it gain some steam, and trade it then.
Do you want to roster bait now for the next 3 months before rookie drafts, or do you want to abstain and then roster bait for the next 4 to 10 years because you were really, really smart about it? And, you know, yeah, I get it. It's just hard to abstain. That wasn't built that way.
Yeah. And a lot of these deals sometimes are different. Like, you know, obviously someone's like, hey man, you know, the 105, I'll give you CJ Stroud. Click. Okay. Done. Thank you. Whoops. Right, right. Good. You know, don't fucking be an idiot. You know, it's like, okay, yeah, he's worth that. Don't fuck around. Get yourself, you know, someone steps in it. Don't tell them where the shit is. Just let them, oopsie daisy. You know, let them step in it. But other than that, don't have to make a marginal value gain now, because that marginal value gain, you know, is not really, it's very unlikely that if you sold the pick, it's going to look in hindsight like, oh, thank God you got off that pick when you did.
Right.
Not true. Just not going to be the case. It can't be, you know, because they're all going to appreciate as these picks, you know, as we start to get familiar with the second round picks and be like, dude, this draft is actually pretty deep with running backs. Right.
You know, what's really hard, you know, what makes us a really hard to like digest our losses in that case too, is because when you look at the pick after it was used, and it's, even if it ends up being like Quentin Johnson, who I think neither of us have any Quentin Johnson on like between like 50 anymore. More teams. But even if you look back at what the pick could be, if you take an old guy who just falls, if you bought Austin Eckler and you got him this year and you're just like, What did I do? Like, I gave up two firsts. Like, I don't care. Like, one of them already turned into Zay Flowers if it was 110 last year. And this year it might be, you know, you might have crapped out in the playoffs and gotten 108. And who knows who that's going to be. It's the juice ain't worth the squeeze. You know what I mean?
That's right. But so, even if you don't care about taking the pick, even if you're pick agnostic, you're like, dude, I hate making picks because I always pick Quentin Johnston and Nikhil Harry. Fuck that. I want to sell the pick. Okay. Still, wait till you have more marketers. Wait till you have more people that are lining up to say, hey, whoa, wait, you're saying the 108 is available? You know, and again, unless someone absolutely steps in it. Look, Tyreek Hill might be that, but you're right. He's 30, and you have to be a real win-now team with a really stacked roster, and it really changes your fortune to give up the 111 and a 25 first to do that. Because you can't let that 25 first be anything but, you know, a very late playoff pick. And unless you're almost dead certain it's going to be, maybe two late firsts is definitely worth Tyreek Hill. And probably you have to consider making that trade. But again, it's not like, I think it's less of a smash, as you put it, because you have to understand, you know, the 111 may not appreciate that much, but they often do. They often do. I mean, you know, remember, you know, when was Sam Laporta drafted? He was drafted, you know, late second. Jaden Reed, late second, early third, right? All these guys, Tank Dell, Puka Nakua, those are a little bit outliers. I know they're not in every draft, but
not for us. They're not. I know you've got I have 30% of, I think, Puka, 30%. Tank Dell, and 30% Kayshon Booty didn't make it. But like those are educated guesses, and those are
You know,
great lottery tickets. And so that's what I'm saying. Like when you look at what Tyreek Hill ends up being, if let's say my 2025 ends up being 110, I did pretty good. I crapped out in some weird week, like week one of the playoffs this year, kicked my teeth in. But anyway, on to the next one. If that's what ends up happening, there's just, you can look back on those picks after they were used and be like, yeah, but he took Quentin Johnston. Like, so whatever, I gave up Quentin Johnston and somebody else for Tyreek. I look at everybody who was drafted after that. I'm like, I could have had Laporta. Like, I could have traded that one.
Jalen Waddle, Devontae Smith were drafted there. That's right.
Right.
Yeah.
Justin Jefferson was drafted there. I think Joe Burrow was drafted. Yes. Not Joe Burrow, but, you know, there's just all
Josh
these.
Josh Allen. Right.
Right. Yeah. So you know what's tough? The more educated you are in this game, the more those picks are worth, because you can do more with them. So when you trade them away, you have to kind of be arrogant about it and be like, no, because when I give you the 110, like I'm giving you the 107. Like that's how I play. You know what I mean?
Yeah, that's right. When I give you my pick, my pick's awesome because I'm great at this. So you're right, gonna pay right. more for mine. That's right. Yeah. That's right.
So it's just a disparaged market between like, no, I'm not going to give you like 110 and one, you know, another. Derrick Henry's not in that range. He's just not in that range because you know what I can do with that pick?
Yes.
Every single one is A-flowers, you know?
Look, it's true. I saw a lot of bad picks being made ahead of me in a league where I took Zay Flowers in the early second and Jonathan Mingo went ahead of him. Yep. I mean, this happened in rookie drafts. I know y'all are out there shaking your head. Like I saw some shit like this too, Jax, you know, and it's true. And it's like, I was like, holy shit. I just got Zay Flowers and these idiots picked, I don't remember who else, but you know, Jonathan Mingo was the one that was like, oh dear God, yeah. You know, oh dear God. I wasn't picking Jonathan Mingo till after Jaden Reed and Marvin Mims were off the board, probably Laporta too. I mean, I, you know, Mingo was a third rounder for me. I mean, you know, so you can't draft capital be damned. I wasn't going to move him up that much. I certainly started to think, okay, maybe he starts getting into the Rashee Rice zone for me in last year's draft, but that was about it. That was as far up as I could move him. So there was zero chance I was going to get any Jonathan Mingo based off of that situation. And because someone else had a faulty process, in my opinion, they were, they were making, you know, Zay Flowers fall to me in that situation. But I saw Jonathan Mingo go ahead of a lot of great players in draft over draft. I think in one case he did go ahead of both Quentin Johnston and Zay Flowers. Obviously we all kind of missed on Quentin Johnston a bit, but we had some trepidation with Quentin. So, you know, the anatomy did not love Quentin Johnston, especially, and I'll sort of pimp the anatomy is, one of the things that it does is it keeps track of what's happening more recently. And what was happening more recently is players who were succeeding were looking less and less like Quentin Johnston. Players that looked like Quentin Johnston, size, speed, productivity, et cetera, usage, were more prevalent if we go a little bit further back in history, because you needed big bodies to be able to get off press and, you know, they'd let you hold and a lot of two wide receiver sets, et cetera, et cetera. Now with more motion, short passing game, quick passing game, et cetera, players that look more like Tank Dell and Zay Flowers are succeeding in the NFL, yada, yada. We'll go through this as we go through the offseason, but those types of things help us identify sometimes the misses more important than the hits. Cause I don't know if a player is going to be good, but sometimes I can tell you when they're not.
Right. Yeah. No, it's all about avoiding landmines. You know,
yeah.
There's certain methods to gambling. Like there's the Nightingale is where, you lose a dollar, you bet another dollar. It's like, you're either up double or down double and you stop or start whenever you want. You got to have an unlimited bank. I might be explaining that wrong. I don't know, but it's just different.
You probably are, but I like it.
Yeah. There's all kinds of methods is what I'm saying. So what do you,
I love it. So look, no trading your offseason picks yet. Your first round picks. Matter of fact, even your second round, I think second rounds, and you and I both, we're like second round, you know, we love the second round picks.
Oh, if you look at my Twitter bio, it says I'm like high priest of the Church of Seconds. Like it's the most tradable asset in Dynasty. It can be worth the most and worth the least.
Yes.
And there's, you can fill your pockets with them.
You turn it into the most. That's right.
Exactly. Yes,
that's right. Yeah. They're the most undervalued assets in trades, you know, and sometimes, you know, thirds are less like that. They're sort of almost the opposite. Because people look at second and thirds more closely together. I think the difference between a second and a third is greater than the difference between a first and a second oftentimes.
I can see that. Do you think it's going to flip the game on its head when everybody thinks they can pick out the Tank Dell and the Puka Nacua in the third round? Do you think, thirds are going to, it's going to even out a little bit more so you're saying that a lot of these X receivers, these like alphas, tall, heavy, high point catch guys. And they're just, that's not really the way the game is going. And it's going towards more of Tank Dells and the smaller, shiftier guys. Do you think that's why there might be a resurgence in tight ends? And it's not necessarily just that there's a bunch of young ones coming out, but like maybe that position will hold more of the X value while the shifty guys are like changing what defenses have to account for. And now there's not really as much of a need for like a big body linebacker. So the tight end has a little bit more room to play. I don't know. I don't really know how to shift player values and pick values right now. And it's driving me up the wall that I don't feel good about moving even what I see as a good deal right now. And I'm trying to think of, you know, what could be the thing that brings you to the next level is, let's say that you happen to hit on like four of these young hot tight ends. Are there eventually going to be like closer to 25 starting tight ends because it's just, that's what the X receiver becomes, and they get the tight end premium boost. And it's just, where do you sit on Jake Ferguson is what I'm saying.
Maybe I think the tight end position has been what the old prince that is promised. I've been using that a little bit too much, but like we've been like, oh, tight end is deep this year. And then it's not. Tight end is deep this year. And then it's not. And so now it is. Now it is. And so I think we've kind of been seeing that there's been some talent. Look, tight ends also, I mean, you know, we saw Andrews get hurt, Hockenson get hurt, Laporta's now hurt. You know, these tight ends often get hurt, and that's been an issue, you know, going back through time. I mean, you know, Tony Gonzalez and Travis Kelce are an aberration. They are not the norm. You don't ever see players like that. That just doesn't happen. They have short shelf lives, and, you know, they play multiple. They don't play in every game situation. Now we're seeing a little bit of this sort of Dalton Kincaid style, which is like, you know, seam guys, right? They can't block anybody, but they'll play two tight ends. So he's almost like a slot receiver or a big H-back. And so they're trying to deploy them differently to create different type of matchups and different type of mismatches. And so I think a lot of times having a little bit of an understanding of, you know, the coaching tendencies, you know, i.e. Arthur Smith, when you see that. Now, of course, the one thing to remember too is that changes, right? Personnel and scheme changes from year to year. But a guy like Kyle Pitts, one of the things that I'll tell you about Kyle Pitts is Kyle Pitts, you know, is essentially never going to be what some of these fantasy analysts think Kyle Pitts will be because he can't block. And people go, who gives a fuck about blocking, bro? He's a tremendous receiver. Look, he's not an elite X wide receiver in the league. So you can't just put him out at X and he's not Julio Jones, right? And he's not Rob Gronkowski. So tell me who he is. You tell me, you know, go ahead and tell me, you know, it's like, he's not, I'm not the proverbial you. In right. other words, if you can't line up and dominate on the line, then you can't do that. So therefore, if we do line you up there, the defense goes, not worried. We'll put a fucking nickel corner right here and you can't block him, you fucking stiff. You know what I mean? But if you line up a nickel corner over Gronk, he shoves you down to the ground, then blocks the linebacker, right? You know what I mean? It's like, it's just, we need a heavy guy there. Well, I put a heavy guy there. Okay, well, now I run past you. It's the duality of the tight end position that makes him so valuable, right? And which is why Laporta is succeeding, because he can break tackles, he can run the seam, he can catch, but he can block a little too. And that's why Kittle's so dominant. Look, if Kittle were on a slightly different team that threw a little bit more, right? So there's the utilization. And Kelce, well, he's a unicorn in a unicorn situation with a unicorn coach and quarterback, right? I mean, you know, put him on the Giants. You think he's fucking Travis Kelce performance-wise? Of course not. So situation, scheme, quarterback, all these things start to matter. And that's really winning the tight end, is understanding what type of prospect you're drafting. With a guy like Kittle and Laporta, it's an easy eval. You're like, dude, these guys are good at everything. Just fucking throw them out there.
How good is Kincaid at blocking? How often do they put him in there to stop somebody?
Not often.
Okay. So let me ask you a question that might be sensitive. Who blocks more, Kincaid or Gabe Davis?
Gabe Davis.
Okay, so but they're paying him like an X receiver, right? And he provides a lot more value to the game. All right, well, I might be coping a little bit right now, and I know I'm sure you are too. He provides a lot more value to the game than just catching balls. Okay, like he's a great That's blocker. True. He's part of the scheme. He's part of the leadership. Like he's been there. They love him there. They love him. He's a free agent, by the way. This was supposed to be a free agent show, and I was gonna, you know, I wonder what you were gonna do with that. But if he's blocking as much as Kincaid, like, give me the tight end premium. It hurts. It hurts.
Yeah. Yeah, I think but when they drafted him, when Buffalo drafted him, they knew what they were drafting. You know, they sort of had a hole at slot, and they had Dawson Knox, and they drafted a slot tight end in the first round. You're like, I think I know what they're going to do here. And that's kind of what they did. Now, can Kincaid be that? That's the thing is, like, obviously it's like, can a guy block or not? It's not like, it's not binary. Yes, he can. No, he can. It's like, to what degree, right? Like, how much are you putting pressure on the defense by lining a guy up in a certain spot? That's really what it is. And it's why Gronk was the ultimate mismatch. He was, nearly an X wide receiver out there. He was so good when they lined him out wide. And a lot of times they were so smart because they'd line him up inside and then they'd be like, okay, we got exactly the matchup we want. They'd just shift and just move him outside. And the defense was in man. And so you'd watch this poor linebacker, like, you know, follow him out there and be like, oh my God, I'm dead. Right. You know, yeah. It's number 52, just, you know, moving from the inside to out on a corner by himself next to Gronk going, help me, you know what I mean? And so because he could do both of those things, well, that's a unique player. As great as Kyle Pitts is, if he got that matchup out there, he would fucking kill 52 out there. But they don't need to worry about when he's in, they don't need to worry about it. So 52 ain't anywhere near him because I don't need to have 52 there to stand up to your block. I can have number 32 stand up and block near you, right? So this is the difference in these matchups. And, you know, there are subtleties, and it's not like we know what's going to happen on every play, but we can kind of guess as to how they're going to utilize you based off of your skill set.
You know, and another problem with buying and selling right now is we don't know what's going to happen. There's like six plus head coaching jobs that just opened up, seven now with Pete Carroll gone.
Unbelievable.
Yeah. That was a happy shock. You know, it was a happy shock. Like, good for him. Hmm. You know?
Yeah. I felt really bad, you know, just because, you know, I go way back with Pete Carroll. Obviously I'm a New England Patriots fan, and, you know, we sort of unfairly hated Pete Carroll when he, you know, was the Patriots coach. We felt like he was underachieving, and it's probably a little bit of Bledsoe underachieving, but, you know, of course, Parcells and Belichick, and we get spoiled as we went along. But, you know, Pete had been such a, you know, energetic, positive, amazingly awesome influence to so many people in the organization, players, fans. Like, Pete is a legendary, awesome, awesome person and coach. So tough to see him go. Listen, the one that caught me by surprise, what in the hell are the Titans doing letting go of Mike Vrabel?
I don't know, man. What do you think they're just going to start, like, kicking players and coaches back and forth between the Raiders? Because they're talking to Antonio Pierce, and I don't know. I would like to see either the Titans or the Raiders build a culture, or just build something that the fans can get behind. They did, and now they're changing things up.
The Titans did anyway. I feel like Vrabel is culture, right?
Sure. For sure. Yeah, three winning seasons. It's a very Derrick Henry offense. Like, you know what you're getting. It somehow makes it into the playoffs. Sometimes it's the first seed in their, or, you know, winning their conference a few times. Like, it didn't make sense. It wasn't very fun, but it worked.
I just think Mike Vrabel can flat out coach. Let me just say that as simple as possible. As a New England Patriots fan, I know that Vrabel's a Patriot, whatever, but, like, as a Patriots fan, as soon as I'm thinking, oh, here comes the news about Belichick leaving and not sure what we're going to do and da-da-da, and I've said I want Ben Johnson to usher in some new quarterback, and that seems like the best sort of new age thing to do. As soon as Vrabel became available, I'm like, oh, Vrabel, fine then. Let's just get fucking Vrabel. Because he's like, you know what you're getting. You're getting culture, toughness, like, you know, I just think Vrabel is a rock solid NFL coach. And if he gets talent, he can win. He can win without talent. I mean, he hasn't had a quarterback. Who's the best quarterback he's had? Ryan Tannehill? Like, they've made playoffs. They've won playoff games. They've won they're always in the game. You're always watching them going, they're in good shape here. Wow, look at this. You know, you're never like, what the fuck are they doing? You know, it's like they're so well put together. And I don't know how you look at that team and go, you know what the problem is here? That motherfucker. You know what right. I mean? I can't. Now, maybe it's so. We don't have all the inside information, but it doesn't make any sense to me.
I hate to say this because I do like Vrabel a lot, but did he just keep up the culture that Arthur Smith built there? And he stayed going with Derrick Henry, and then he switched out. And the problem was he didn't have A.J. Brown. He traded him away for Treylon Burks.
Did he do that?
I don't know, but I feel really guilty as a Saints fan.
No, we have to get rid of AJ Brown. I don't think that was him.
Do you think that
where the rift come from? Maybe he's like, you guys are fucking idiots, and then maybe like, you know what?
What if he goes to? I'm really excited for the Falcons. There's a lot of direction that they could go between which quarterback they get and which coach they could get, and they could get, they could get Ben Johnson from the Lions to come use those studs on offense and give us our fantasy like gold that we've been waiting for. And you can get, Laporta, Pitts could end up being the Laporta, and London could end up being, Pitts could end up being the, there's right. things that we could hope for. And then there could be Vrabel going there and us end up being like, God, 2 more years of this, 3 more years of this. Right. Or Ben Johnson go there. I mean, I just don't know. I don't know what to do right now. I hate coming on this show at this time. I appreciate you.
You don't know what to do with your hands?
I don't know what to do with. I can't give any advice right now. My advice is to sit on my hands, right? Like,
That's actually some advice. That's actually good advice. And that's kind of what I tell people, right? I think I started to talk about it and then got away from it a little bit. But like my sort of biorhythms of the year, like as soon as the fantasy season is over, you know, week 18 now, it used to be week 17, is like, fucking throw it away. Like literally talk to your family for a week. You know what I mean? Like stop the fantasy. Don't worry about football. It's irrelevant. Maybe just see who wins what, where the seating is, but like go hang out with your actual family. And then through the playoffs, from basically now through the Super Bowl, it's like, enjoy football. Enjoy football. Don't have to worry about your fantasy lineup. Look, if you like DFS or you know anything, any of these other games, gambling, sure, all that, of course. But I'm just saying, like, enjoy football without like freaking out about your lineups and trades and even your dynasty teams. Let it sit.
Put the spoon down, you junkies.
There it is. There it is. Put the spoon down. And no, he's not talking about pie. He's talking about the crooked spoon. I assume. I don't know how. But what we can do is we can look at some free agents real quick, which I will do with you. So unrestricted free agents, you sent me this over. I will ask you, what is the most interesting thing that you see on the board of 2023 unrestricted free agents?
Do you want to go down again? Can we list off a couple names? It'll probably take about 2 minutes and we can go through each position and where the list of consensus thing goes to where we're interested in these guys.
I'll do it real quick for you. Yeah, sure. I mean, at quarterback, you got some pretty big names, Kirk Cousins, Baker Mayfield. And those are the two sort of starters, Minshew, Flacco, a couple others, Winston, are free. The wide receivers, I think they always seem to sort of get locked up for the most part, like T. Higgins and Michael Pittman Jr., I think are going nowhere. Some of the secondary guys, Mike Evans, Calvin Ridley, Marquise Brown, Gabe Davis could be on the move. There's obviously a lot of wide receivers that are behind that are actually pretty interesting. The running backs is where I think it's most interesting because quickly tight ends, you have like Dalton Schultz, Hunter Henry, Noah Fant, not much, honestly. The running backs is where there's a lot of intrigue because I always think like a running back too, when a running back moves out of the way, it creates an opportunity for some other running back. You know, that's not necessarily the case at wide receiver because targets are earned, you know? So, but at the running back position, handoffs are given. And, you know, I'd start it right at the top, Saquon Barkley. Do you think that Saquon stays in New York? I don't have any information. I have no idea what they're going to do with Saquon.
It brings me back to conversations that we were having at this time last year, right? Where we were like, y'all, the big reckoning at running back is coming and all of the Saquons, you know, there's all these guys that are sad to say it. They, you know, I don't know what you want to risk on buying them because of their ages, like Austin Ekeler, Derrick Henry. We don't know where DeAndre Swift is going to be next year. If he had all of the touchdowns that Jalen Hurts had from the 1 yard line, yeah, I think Jalen Hurts had 15 touchdowns on the 1 yard line.
Yeah.
He would have been like top two this year. And so the reckoning kind of happened. And I don't know if there's any good running backs coming in. I think that part of what's happening is that running backs are realizing how short their shelf life is in the NFL and how kind of disrespected they are contract wise and money wise. And they're able to, you know, they're very prolific in college, especially when college, when you have more dependence on them and they stand out yeah. more, they might make more staying in college for another year and staying with their team. And we yeah. might have,
yeah,
this might be the reckoning and this might be the year where you can win with all these old guys. If you can package them right and not miss out on the talent, but I don't know if there's anybody new coming in, and there's like 10 interesting guys. And I crossed off the last few on the list. Ezekiel Elliott, look what he did for us. You know, there's a, yeah. but so I didn't even go as far down as Devin Singletary or Zach Moss. And Zach Moss was RB4 through like week 10.
Even if you have a lot of good running backs coming in, like we thought we had a pretty good class last year, you know, Tajay lands behind Derrick Henry, Zach Charbonnet lands behind, you know, Ken Walker, et cetera, et cetera. You start to, you know, see things where you're like, damn, these guys didn't even, nobody's got a clear path. I mean, Kendre Miller, tough spot to land behind, you know, a veteran and Kamara. And you know what I mean? So it's like, and he was hurt. And so a lot of times, you know, you can think, oh yeah, there's some good backs, but they kind of do need their own space unless they're absolute studs. You know, I always said that, you know, a guy like Jonathan Taylor, doesn't matter where he lands, he is the alpha when he lands. You know, there's certain guys like that, but there's not really any of those guys, to be honest with you. I mean, I don't think there's a single one of the sort of premium super alpha running back predator types in this class, period. So therefore, there's none that are going to usurp whomever is in front of them. So they're landing spot dependent to some degree, certainly, especially in year one. But I think it may be a little bit of musical chairs with these running backs, as it always is, right? You know, one guy goes one play, you know, DeAndre Swift is gone. Well, then David Montgomery comes in or whatever, you know what I mean? That type of thing. And, you know, you look down the list, I think a lot of these guys are buys based off uncertainty and based off the fact that they'll likely get a contract and their values will go up, you know, especially the mid-tier guys, you know, maybe the Pollards. And J.K. Dobbins is an interesting buy because I think he's cheap as hell right now. And I don't know exactly where he lands, but, and I don't know if he even has the legs to be competitive, but for what you'll spend on him versus what his sort of actual upside is, if he happens to be healthy, he was a dominant prospect. And so he has the ability to actually have some asymmetrical upside this offseason. So that'd be the one free agent. Other than that, you're looking at, you know, Saquon and Jacobs. I think they're both sort of valued as, you know, borderline RB1s in Dynasty. Eckler, very, very scary proposition there. Derrick Henry, we probably do get a signing. We probably do get one more year of him scoring touchdowns someplace, maybe in a place like Dallas. He's been linked to Dallas quite a bit. So I think Derrick Henry could be, you know, Dallas bound this offseason. And if that's the case, you could do a lot worse than trading some sort of, you know, you could trade maybe a third round pick right now for him, especially again, on the clock, you might be able to, you know. So if you can trade some sort of a 24 rookie pick that's not premium for Derrick Henry, you could end up, you know, with a really good 2024 asset. You mentioned DeAndre Swift, not sure what happens to him. Tony Pollard, boy, oh boy, you know, 26 years old. I asked Chalk last week if he was a buy. He doesn't think so. But then you get down to some, like you said, some of the other, you know, lesser known guys. But yeah, I'm a big fan of sort of seeing how I can maybe slide J.K. Dobbins onto my roster, you know, so before he signs the
place. I've never started J.K. Dobbins, but I've probably had him 15 times between my 20 leagues just because of when he gets hurt and then he starts coming back, and it's just a stock. It's just a stock up and down.
Yeah.
That's one thing. So this might be the time to start looking at, you know, talent over everything at running back, because who knows what's going to happen. First of all, with all these free agents, let's just go through them real quick again. Sure. Saquon Barkley, Josh Jacobs, Austin Eckler, Derrick Henry, DeAndre Swift, Tony Pollard, Antonio Gibson, J.K. Dobbins, Zeke Singletary should be on the list. He showed us this year.
Yep.
Zach Moss, he showed us this year. He was RB4 through like week 10. A.J. Dillon, not so much. I really, really hoped for big things. But that's a whole lot of names. And now you can't just even say, well, there's a musical chairs of like 12 running backs who could end up in the RB1 territory next year for the entire year. We also don't know what these coaching changes are going to bring to these teams. So let's say, you know, Antonio Gibson could definitely use a change of scenery, or he could get re-signed and use a change of coach and use a change of QB. And both of those things are coming. So there's just no way to assess it right now other than, I guess, just talent, which is, it's weird. It's the, we were able to go zero RB for a few years and hit on these Jerome Fords and everything. And maybe this next wave will be like, all right, well, by the, so I've been one of these deals with J.K. Dobbins coming in, get him as cheap as you can. One, I have a really good trade partner and I kind of hosed them on one. And I was like, all right, well, look, I've got your second next year. Do you want a little bit more control of it? Give me right after J.K. Dobbins tore his, you know, he messed up his, I don't even remember what it was. His other ACL? No, his Achilles? It doesn't matter. We're going to forget when he starts doing box jumps in June. You know what I mean? He's going to get right back. So, like,
fucking ligament is torn off his fucking bone.
And especially with the running backs that we're fading because of their age and the lack of running backs that are coming in, he'll be worth a second at some point. He just will. When he gets on a team and he gets, you know, he'll get the Cam Akers treatment. He was always worth a second until he was worth nothing. So
that's right.
It's fine to take in J.K. Dobbins. And I got Antonio Gibson in that same deal. And like, those are two young dudes who, you know, have both shown it when they've had it and they just need opportunities. And maybe this is the time to buy guys knowing that nothing is going to be the same as it was last season.
That's
right. You know, except for maybe Isaiah Pacheco somehow.
Yeah, that's right. You lean into the uncertainty at running back because there's so much of it. You know, we think we know so much, except for, again, the very, very top tier guys that are like, you know, certified studs. And, you know, that's the Saquon Barkley, Josh Jacobs types. You know, they're just lead backs. That's the way it is. And, you know, until they're too old, of course, you know, age is the only thing that takes them off the shelf. But, you know, no other player is going to be like, well, Saquon's backing up fucking, you know, Devin Singletary now.
They're career running backs. Some of these guys are career running backs, right? Like the ETNs and the hopefully probably Swifts. Like there's just a bunch of guys that just say, all right, well, he's going to be worth what he's worth, but he's probably going to be worth what he's worth for like 5 years. And you just hope for them to be good because then you can just not worry about that position. And if things are only if you're going to win by having them because through attrition, because the older guys are getting faded harder and harder and harder, and there's not a new batch because NIL is keeping them in college another year, this might be the year to just like go get those guys. Right.
Yeah. Yep.
I don't know.
All right, man. All right, man. I got something for you. So every year I like to put on wax my incorrect playoff predictions because, you know, Lord knows I'm a moron. Everybody knows that. I'm an idiot. And I don't know what's going to happen, but I like to say the wrong thing out loud so that people can make fun of me once I'm wrong. Does that make sense?
Sure.
Yeah. Okay. I just want to make sure. Yeah. You want to put it on wax. Here's why I'm an idiot. So week one, let's talk about the games just from a fucking pure fun standpoint. You know, what we think is going to happen and kind of go from there. So the first game is the Joe Flacco Browns going into Houston to face the CJ Stroud Texans. Unbelievable, huh? I mean, I'm so happy that CJ Stroud's in the playoffs. The fact that CJ Stroud versus Joe Flacco is a playoff matchup, chef's kiss.
Two generations apart. And I don't even mean like NFL career generations. I mean like
it could possibly,
possibly familial relations. Three generations down. Yeah, it's wild. It's fun. Good for the Texans, too. They've been a punching bag for so long. You know, they deserve a little breath of fresh air, a little bit of promise.
Yeah. CJ Stroud joined Joe Montana and Tom Brady as the only players ever to lead the league in like passing yards per game and touchdown to interception ratio for a season or something. Absolutely sick season. I forget the stat. I'm probably butchering it. It's okay. I forget.
He's probably got a bunch of them, to be fair. You might just have an amalgam of like two guys. Yeah. He's
unbelievable.
Great company.
Not as rookies, just ever to do something like that. It's like crazy. So yeah, he's the real deal. And so now you got to bet against either the fucking, you know, the found money of Joe Flacco or, you know, just the electricity of CJ Stroud and this at home Houston team. The defense there for Cleveland scares me in this game. Who do you like?
I just, I'd love to see Stroud prove that he's the guy by going just one or two more steps and, you know, delaying what's probably the inevitable and making everybody really sad. Joe Flacco, I want to see him keep going for sure. I was looking up points per game of all players this season, and he's the leading player in points per game. So embrace the chaos. Embrace the chaos.
So if you want, I'll go first, but we're going to pick final scores. So you got to pick a final score. And I'm going to say, this pains me. Cleveland Browns, 23. Houston Texans, 21.
We're mathematically about the same spread. All right. I got Browns 31 and Houston 27.
There we go.
So I hope for a few more points, but we're in the same ballpark with who's going to win and by how much.
Yeah, it's probably a bit higher scoring than that. That Cleveland defense is going to be really difficult. And sometimes these playoff games, you ever notice like they kind of don't want to fuck up, you know, because like a pick six is like such an important thing. They're like dump off punt. Like, let's just fucking, you know what I mean? So sometimes those games get a little slow start because they don't want to, nobody wants to make the first mistake. You know, and so sometimes that can be a way that the game goes. So I love it when that happens. And it's like 3-0 with like 4 minutes in the first half. And you're like, dude, what is going on right now? You know what I mean? It's like, oh my God. So yeah, that's going to be a great game. Potentially, I'd love to see just CJ Stroud just tear up that Cleveland defense and win like 38-17 or something. It's just like the coronation of CJ Stroud. That'd be the game I want to see. But I think Cleveland beats them. Close, maybe by a field goal. The Peacock Bowl, Saturday night, which will be the Miami Dolphins, the struggling, scuffling Miami Dolphins visiting the struggling, scuffling Kansas City Chiefs. I've never seen so many teams limping into the playoffs like this. Like, this is unbelievable. Both teams are 11-6. Both teams thought they were going to be like, you know, Chiefs 1 seed. Dolphins thought they were going to be a 1 or 2 seed. Now they're playing in the fucking Peacock Bowl. Nobody's even gonna watch this game. You know, I will tell you, I'm watching it elsewhere. I'm not fucking, maybe I even want Peacock, but I'm gonna get it whenever I want, not for this game. I'm not letting them tell me what to do. No, I'm sure a lot of people are saying the same thing. But what do you think about this matchup? And what do you think is gonna happen here?
It really is a sad day, huh? Yeah. Like these guys, some of my fantasy teams were built around Mahomes and Tua. You know, one expensive one. It's the yin yang, but of QBs, and it happened to work out until it didn't. And now they're like, somehow this is the year of Jake Browning.
Yes.
You know, just in general, just like the whole ethos of it.
Yes.
Sure.
Right.
Yeah. It's going to be Jake Browning and Joe Flacco in the Super Bowl because Miami and Kansas City and Tua and Pat Mahomes are going to get busted out by week one of the playoffs. It's just how it is. It's a kick. Yes. This was a kick in the teeth fantasy year. I got to be completely honest with you. That went sideways week one of the playoffs. It kicked my teeth in. That was a rough one, man. How'd you do in all your leagues?
I dominated.
Did you really?
I dominated everything. I won everything. I won it all. I really did. I have 17 dynasty leagues. I think I got 11 to the champion, to the semis, or
okay.
You know, and then I got 10 to the Super Bowl and like 1-8 or something like that. It was like ridiculous.
That's ridiculous. Awesome. That's awesome.
Ridiculous.
That's almost 50%.
I won everything. It was crazy. It just was crazy. I got, and what's crazy is I had very similar playoff advancement last year, but I only won one Super Bowl last year out of 16. You know, I picked up it's luck. I mentioned this on the pod. It's like, you know, last year I had very good winning percentage during the regular season, got a lot of teams to the playoffs, and then everything fell apart. And a lot of it's like who you roster. Like, you know, I'm pretty heavily invested in Dak and Lamar. So, you know, it worked out, you know, I mean, those two guys were great, you know, whatever. It's just lucky, you know, I mean,
can you run pure 3 weeks in a row? And if you're really good, you only have to run pure 2 weeks in a row,
Yep. Right. That's basically what I did. Yeah. Everything that advanced, I just got super lucky in the two semis and Super Bowl. I mean, I just did. Oh, I mean, yeah, I had great teams, of course, you know, I mean, but you can have great teams and get unlucky too. It's like, I ran really, really pure. So sorry to hear you didn't run good, but
it's fine. Ride the lightning.
Very, very profitable.
Cool.
Yeah. It was and probably so my biggest profitable year for percentage. Yeah. I don't think I've
ever won our seasonal league too. We have the 18 person. Yeah. It's pretty good. Ah, this guy, he might know what he's talking about. Maybe
the club, I did win the club championship as well. Yeah. 16 team league where, you know, it's actually, that's a pretty fun league. Do you like that league?
It was. Yeah. No, it is interesting having to like really know who you're picking in the 18th round. Cause those are, those are definitely starting for you. In a league that size.
Did you notice I had Puka on my team in that league?
Oh, that'll do it.
Did you notice?
Nah, that's pretty good.
Maybe, just maybe, I knew what I was talking about with Puka because I had him fucking everywhere. Thank you very much. Yeah, Puka also, I'm like 47% Puka across Dynasty Leagues. I had him in all the redrafts. Yeah, just fucking, of course. I got Chiefs. I got Chiefs like 27-17.
That's wild. So we're doing the percentage thing again. We have the same distance between them, but I got Kansas City getting 17 over Miami's 11. Don't ask me how that's going to happen, but I don't like the way this game. I just don't love the way these offenses are going.
Yeah. No, they're not going good, but, you know, it's really hard to bet against Patrick Mahomes not scoring in the playoffs, so that's it. That's the only reason. But, yeah, I think the Miami Dolphins might have some hard time moving the football against Kansas City, especially – is there going to be – I think there's going to be weather, too. Night game in Arrowhead. There's no way Dolphins are going in there and winning that game.
I don't know, but this is the first time in like, all of Andy Reid's tenure there that they haven't had a top maybe five offense. This is the first time, and they're way, way down there in their offensive production, but their defense is killing it this year. It's completely holding them. So this is, I hate how not fun this is. This should be the most fun game of the year. Color schemes, everything.
Yeah, like, the whole it should thing. Be great. Visually. That's right. Yes. Yep. Oh, well, we, you know, it is what it is. We'll watch it on some stupid fucking network that doesn't even exist. Fucking idiots. Sunday.
Who you got?
Pittsburgh visits Buffalo, 10 a.m. West Coast, obviously 1 o'clock Eastern. Pittsburgh and Mason fucking Rudolph.
Oh, no.
I mean, the uniforms, this is visually good, and the coaches all good.
Might be a snow game.
History, but Mason Rudolph, do we really have to do this? Is he, you know, anyway. So, yeah, I've got I think this is the Bills just absolutely – rolling over the Steelers, and you know, this is like a, you know, 30-13 type of game.
Okay.
Yep.
30-13. I was going to do Buffalo 35, Pittsburgh 24. I'll give Pittsburgh a little bit more credit than that. It's not Mason Rudolph against Josh Allen. It's Mike Tomlin against Josh Allen. And I'll give that a go.
That's right. Yeah, I, you know, can we just get past this game? And if the fucking Steelers go in there and win, which, you know, anything can happen in any game, it's just one of those things where you go, all right, whatever. Just fucking
do you think so? Or do you think it's going to be time to have the talk about everything that's going on in Buffalo and why is Josh Allen going to be, you know, he can't lead the Chargers to the playoff, even though you have Justin Herbert. Is he going to, I don't know, man. It's so fickle. It's so fickle.
No, actually, you know, it's funny because I'm zigging when everybody's zagging on Josh Allen. And when everybody was, you know, I would put in an MVP bet for him. I thought he still should be very much in line for the MVP. I mean, he just took his team to the 2 seed. They're 11-6. They were 6-6 at one point. You know, yeah. Oh, he led the league in turnovers or whatever. You know what? He also leads the fucking NFL and like, without me, my team ain't shit. You know what I mean? Like, you know, literally, this is a very, very important dude on his team. I mean, I don't know, man. I think Josh Allen has been very prolific. And did you see the 3rd-and-13 run?
Mm-mm.
This past, oh my God, dude. They, against the Dolphins, you know, it was 3rd-and-13. The Dolphins needed to stop him. And he scrambled on 3rd-and-13. And he looked, there was no chance. Like, not Lamar Jackson does not get the first down. Like, it's not because he's better than Lamar. It's just, it would be not possible. There was a wall of people. The only reason he got it is because he's big, strong. Like, I don't even understand still. You go watch the play again. You're like, no way he got the first down. He's just, you know, he's a playmaker. And, you know, guys like that who can just make plays when your team needs them, it's incredible. And Josh Allen does that. You know, yeah, he can be a little erratic. But even his picks, I thought his picks were smart. You know, it was a 4th-and-2 play or something like that, and he got flushed. And
you're talking about in the first half when he was at about the 40-yard line. He was at the opponent's 40-yard line, and it was 4th down, and he threw it in the end zone, and they intercepted it, which is better than a punt.
That's a punt.
Yeah, it's a Hail Mary that at worst becomes a punt.
That's like a bad play. No, it wasn't. That's fine. That's not a turnover. That was better than a turnover on downs, because if they turn it over on down, the guy should have not caught it.
So
it was actually a bad defensive play, legitimately. So yes, that was actually better than him incompleting it. So absolutely, that's where, if you actually watch the games, understand what's going on. He didn't have, he's already got 2 turnovers in this one. It's like, well, yeah, he has 1 turnover. Yeah, just come on. Let's call the game as it is. And so, a lot of those situations, guys sometimes are afraid to throw that ball there. He almost baited him into catching it. It's like, look, either my guy's catching it, let's see what happens. That was a smart play. Moving on to a game that I think is going to be just Dallas fans with the tightest assholes ever until they have a big enough lead. Like, this is like, Cowboys fans, because like, this Cowboys team is good. And, it's, for whatever reason, they have to play this like baby rattlesnake team, right? This sort of like Green Bay Packer team, which is like, they should be able to overlook them. They weren't all that good. They backed into the playoffs, but like, they have this baby rattlesnake quarterback in Jordan Love, who's prolific, all these sort of young weapons that don't know any better. Like, this team is dangerous, but they should kill them. You know what I mean? So like, I don't know, man. I can't wait for this one. This one is my favorite game of the week. I don't know about for you.
Where is it?
It's in Dallas, of course.
Oh,
Dallas,
that's going to be tough. That's going to be tough for Jordan Love. Let's call it a test. See if he's made it through year one.
Look, if he gets anywhere close to this, I mean, look, the Cowboys should kind of roll in this one just because of how good their offense is and how, inexperienced the offense is for Green Bay. Green Bay's kind of been getting exposed in the passing game, obviously not, last week, but like, I don't suspect that they're going to be able to stop this Cowboys team. But it's one of those things where it's like, even if you're up, 21-3, if all of a sudden somehow it's like, 24-13, in the third quarter and Green Bay's got the ball, you still are nervous because it's like, oh shit, dude, what the fuck, bro? We need to put this game away. So like, you're never totally out of the woods. And so I think that, I do think what I'm going to see in this game is the Cowboys pull away. I think 31-20 final score. Cowboys do get it done, but a couple little scare moments in this one for the Cowboys, but they end up getting it done.
I like it. We're about the same amount away again. I like them at Dallas beating them 35-28, but I can see the Green Bay keeping it kind of close. Oh, it's going to be fun. You remember the last time Dak was healthy, and back then I think he was like a top 5 quarterback through that season. That's when he broke his leg, and then he took a full year coming back. And ever since then, it's been like, oh, well, Dak's 28 years old, and he's been, down for the last 2 seasons. And there's reasons, and there's reasons. And now he's got CeeDee Lamb. It's fun. It's fun to have held on to him. How far do you think they're going to go?
Look, I like Dallas a lot. I think Dallas is my favorite to come out of, out of the NFC. Even a little bit. Like, I think they can win in multiple ways. I do like the fact that, you can just sit back and shotgun and come back from down 10. Obviously the Niners are the best, the best roster for sure. But yeah, I really like this Cowboys team. I think that, aren't we predestined for Cowboys Niners in the, conference championship? Like that just needs to be what it is, right?
Oh, that's beautiful. Yeah. I mean, we're hoping for that color scheme. I dig it.
Yeah, the throwback, the whole thing, the Aikman, the Montana, the Rice, the Steve Young, the whole kit and caboodle, right? The whole thing.
The Joe Flaccos. Just the
history. Yeah. The Joe Flaccos, of course. But, just the whole history, the whole thing, that's got to be the NFC Championship game. So we'll see if that one can hold. The night game, I think, is going to be a shootout. You got the Rams going to Detroit. The Matt Stafford, Jared Goff Bowl. I love everything about this game. I mean, There's a couple of bad matchups, but this is not one of them.
Who's healthy? Is there anybody out of consequence on either of their sides?
I don't think Laporta's playing.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, that's going to be it's going to be a fun game. You're right.
It's going to be a fun game. So I think this is a shootout. I think this goes both teams into the 30s. And right? And Matt Stafford with like 38 seconds zip zam zooms down for the game-winning field goal, 35-34. Rams.
35-34?
Rams.
We're exactly in line on all of these percentage-wise, but sometimes I'm like 25, like give me 35% more. Yeah, I've got Rams beating them 45-42. It's going to be a really fun game. It's going to be a really fun game.
Holy shit.
Come on, man. Let's go.
Over. I love it. Let's go.
87 point over.
Let's go, baby. Dude, I am so excited for that. I just want it to be, you know, where it's like, you know, 2.5 minutes left and it's like 27-28 and it's like there's still four more touchdowns or something. You know what I mean? Like it's like whoop, whoop, just back and forth. That's the epitome of what this game needs to be. But regardless of whether they're in the 20s, the 30s, or the 40s, I'm just hopeful that it's like Stafford with the ball, 38 seconds down a field goal, or even better would be down a touchdown with like a minute and 12 or something, you know, where he has to go the whole field. But you know, that'd be fun as fuck. Just Puka and Cup and just Stafford and the whole thing, let's see it happen, boy, go get him. I really want to see that. So, and on the flip side of things, I don't want to see the Philadelphia Eagles on Monday night go to Tampa Bay. This is like a disgusting game.
Why? Disgusting. Tell me why.
I mean, because the Eagles are just shitting the bed as they come down the stretch. AJ Brown is hurt. Jalen Hurts is hurt. Like I'm just going to tell you, I think the Bucs win this game, and I don't. I do. I'm telling you, man. Michael P. Duncan right now just quit. Oh, Michael. No, seriously. Come on, buddy. Hey, come back. No. I didn't mean it. Michael. He'll come back. He'll be fine. Michael P. Duncan just walked out on me. But yeah, the Bucs, I think, are going to win the game. I just think they're going to win the football game. It's going to be ugly. It's going to be like, you know, 21-17, 20-17, Bucs win.
What did you have the score at?
20-17.
Oh, yeah. I got in the same exact place as you. I got 21-18. Yeah, it's gonna be really, really, really gross.
Bucks? You like Bucks too?
How do you feel about Baker Mayfield? Do you think he's gonna stick around? Do you think they're gonna keep Mike Evans and try running back? What do you sit with them?
I don't know about honestly, if you're Baker Mayfield and they're like, hey man, we're gonna have you back, you're like,
oh, so absolutely.
Like, but you gotta be like Mike Evans, right? Like you're gonna keep him, right? Like you don't want to come back if you're Baker without Mike Evans.
No, you're absolutely right. They were BFFs all year. That was really fun.
It was like his best season ever. I mean, so yeah, I think Baker has earned the start. Obviously he brings his team to the playoffs and the division remains weak next year. I mean, you know, I mean, yeah, I think you've got to kind of bring Baker back. And so he's a sneaky little buy in Dynasty, ain't he?
Yeah, I like him. It depends on what you can get these guys for.
Superflex, obviously. Yeah.
Yeah. It was a lot of getting burned this year too. Like, would you rather have Jake Browning was winning leagues and Joe Burrow was inaccessible? There's lessons that I don't want to learn from that.
Yeah, that's right. No. The injury lesson is not one to really learn, other than, you know, hey, be ready for these things to happen. Don't just be like, because I know a lot of guys look at their team, they go, look at this, boom, championship. I got it all, you know? And it's like, you know, Justin Jefferson, Jamar Chase, fucking, you know, right? Joe Burrow, Kirk Cousins, it's going to be Mark Andrews. I can't lose. It's like, oh, okay. Yeah, is that right? You know, so sometimes, you know, you just look at your team and you think it's rock solid, and it is, but it doesn't mean that you're going to win. Injuries can really fuck you up in this game. But yeah, I just think the Eagles are too broken. Their defense, look, you want to talk about a week that Mike Evans can go off. They have been unable to stop the pass. I mean, actually picking 20-17 is probably too light. The Bucs might score 40 against this fucking shit Eagles team. Sorry, Philly fans.
Do you think Eagles are still going to stay at 14? Still going to be Eagles 14?
Right. 40-14. Go fuck yourself, Eagles
fans.
Yep.
It's going to be an Arthur Smith exit.
Well, Matt Patricia, that's, you know, if they can fire Matt Patricia, find a way to get his ass off the team by Monday night, they have a shot at holding Tampa Bay under 30. But if they keep Patricia out there, they're in trouble. They're in trouble. Maybe they should just put him at D-line.
That's a New England fan that's just been burned too many times.
Bro, he's so bad. He's so bad. Hey, let's call it, baby. This is so much fun. You got anything else you want to mention before we tell the people what's going on and what's happening?
No, I don't really have anything to promote. Keep your mental health in mind. Hard time of year for some people. Reach out to the people you love. And if you didn't get to tell them happy holidays, call them up now.
Yeah, man, for sure, brother. I mean, and you know, when you think you're alone, you're generally not. There's generally people who do care about you no matter who you are and where you are. So, you know, everybody needs a little bit of help sometimes. That's a good point, brother. I appreciate you bringing it up. I mean, not that my listeners need that, because they're all alpha males and alpha females. They're all out there just killing their leagues and everything. But, you know, if you know someone, you know, wink, sure, wink, ask them for a friend. You know what I mean? You know, right? Because obviously none of you guys, but, you know, other people, just remember, you know, look out for them. But yeah.
Reach out about your friends.
That's right. Yeah. Tell them they're okay too. But yeah, no, be a good friend, be a good everything. All right, brother. Thank you for coming on. Matt Chester, we just had some fun. We talked a lot of bullshit. I do want to remind you that the off season for me starts this week. I will be prepping all my stuff starting this week. The anatomy series will be coming out soon. Me and Chalk are putting that together starting right now. I'll obviously let you know when that's happening. I've got a new podcast coming out very, very soon. It's going to be exclusively on the Undroppables Network. It's going to be fun as hell. We've got a lot of plan there. I've got Felix Sharp next week. I've got Ray Garvin the week after. We've got all sorts of awesome guests lined up after that. This is going to be a lot of fun here in the offseason. I can't wait to talk to Felix next week. I've got a lot of homework to do before then, because I don't even know these guys' names. I don't know how to pronounce these names. I've got a lot of work to do. So I'm going to be using, you know, the thing on Google where you tap the thing and it tells you how to say stuff. I'm going to be using that thing. I don't know what I'm doing. It's going to be great. Felix is going to set us straight. He's going to start me on my path. He's going to uncover some deep, deep players in this draft, people to keep our eye on, people for me to go scout. I can't wait. And with that, on behalf of everybody here at the Undroppables, on behalf of everybody here at the Undrafted, on behalf of a soon to be really pissed off Philadelphia Eagle fan, Mr. Michael P. Duncan, you have been joined by the Mad Jester. And I am Jax Falcone. And we are out.